My name is Gary Butterfield.
My name is Cole Ross.
And you're listening to Watch Out for Fireballs Dispatch, the monthly show where we answer your questions, discuss a topic, read your responses to this month's games, and announce next month's games.
Yeah. Gonna put this little reminder up here up front. We're gonna be at the Milwaukee Gaming Classic. That's what that's called?
Is that, yes.
Yes. Milwaukee Gaming Classic. There we go. Midwest Gaming Classic. Yes. We'll be in Milwaukee for the Midwest Gaming Classic.
Yes. Only gaming can happen there. Yes. It's that kind of classic.
Right. Yeah. Yes. But downtown Milwaukee, their convention center, that's going to be April, I believe the 6th and 7th is the weekend there. Doing a live show. Yeah. We're going to have details about a meetup. But if you are looking to travel and come see us, that's when you can do it.
Yeah, it's always a fun con.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking forward to it. You know, come talk to us. We're nice. We'll have buttons and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And come see our show. We have a good slot.
We do.
The first in our career. It's Saturday at noon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so come you know, grab a food,
mm-hmm.
and sit down and watch our panel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's get right into questions.
Let's do. I'll get started here with Jay. Jay says, congrats on the launch of Real Lich Hours. Loving it so far. Finally took the leap and started Baldur's Gate 3 thanks to it. And as a 5e player since 2018, man, most of Larian's changes would make tabletop way better. Adding more short rest skills helps warlock spell systems gel better with the party better, and you can finally set people on fire. Most fire spells would only burn items not being held in standard 5e. Can you think of any other times a licensed video game made changes worth adding to the original? Every single adaptation of Shadowrun ever.
Yep.
is better than every other original version of Shadowrun ever.
Yeah, that's kind of no question, actually.
Yeah, that's the easy answer, mm-hmm. But it's true. I generally really like the streamlining and doing away with dice rolls in Bloodlines as well.
Mm-hmm.
The tabletop version of Vampire the Masquerade, I think, is not very fun.
No.
Like, some of the best flavor of all time,
mm-hmm.
but the actual mechanics, like doing things,
yeah.
requires a very specific understanding
yeah.
between the storyteller and the players. A real specific focus.
Yeah, that's the only those are the two low hanging fruit ones. I think everything else, you know, like, okay, added to the original from an adaptation, like a game movie adaptation. What?
Yeah. I mean, it tends to be a game being adapted into another game.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, and like Sword and Poker does make poker better.
Mm-hmm.
For what that's worth, like that's better than the original. Poker is stale.
Yeah.
It's like playing Pong at this point. Card games, they're not just Pac-Man anymore.
Yeah. Ben writes, in games that offer a lot of player choice, like Baldur's Gate 3, how important is, quote, staying in character to you? Where do you draw the line between what your avatar would do versus what reaps the best mechanical reward versus what feels right to you as the player? There is no end to what I can justify, Ben.
Okay. it's only a minute whenever you say something on here that somebody starts talking about replies. There's no end to what I can justify. you can justify anything. Like, mm-hmm. one of the things that I think about a lot with avatar reward,
mm-hmm.
in these games is your avatar would want it.
Yeah.
Not just for greed reasons, right? Like, in most of these games, like a game that offers a lot of player choice, and most of these are role-playing games, you have a grander problem,
mm-hmm.
you're seeking out. And if your character at the end of like a thing, it's saying like, hey, you can do this thing that gives you fuzzies, or you can get this thing that gives you, you know, a more like a cool weapon,
mm-hmm.
right? It's not necessarily evil to take the cool weapon because you're just thinking of the greater good.
Yes.
You know, you're thinking like, I'm going to use that cool weapon to fight the end boss.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, Medio is coming, or Luca Blake's coming, or the Absolute is coming, or whatever the big threat is.
Yeah.
I need to be prepared for that. You know, so like, and that kind of thing, I feel like you can justify a lot of things in character.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, I just follow my gut.
Yeah.
In things like that, on the first playthrough, and then second playthrough of anything like that, I do whatever gets me the most content.
Yeah, that's the way to do it, I think.
Yeah. So I just will find out, like, oh, am I closing off paths?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The other thing about going through a second playthrough that helps a lot with this is you have an idea of the shape of the economy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for Baldur's Gate 3 specifically, having beat it now, I understand where scarcity lines are drawn.
Yes.
For example. So I can reject something that is a material reward in favor of role-playing reasons, because I understand that material reward will become meaningless in like 5 hours playtime.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. I just follow my gut. Yeah, you know.
Yeah.
Try to find content. Yeah.
Yeah. Gut's always a good guide.
Yeah.
Fermented Sorcerer says, howdy. I've been doing trauma therapy, and an important exercise is safe space visualization. It helps helps you feel safe and grounded. A funny thing is that I often imagine certain video game settings, like the majestic temples of Ico, the serenity of ruins and Dark Souls, the tranquil landscapes of Shadow of the Colossus, and the beautiful lakes of Sekiro and Hyperlight Drifter. What do you think makes some of the most beautiful video game landscapes, and what do you think makes them beautiful? Maybe that's something to do with how they allow those spaces to speak for themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, I do this too. Recently, like at a root canal and then a bunch of fillings and stuff. I walked through the entirety of Elden Ring in my head while it was happening.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah. You know, just do that little dissociation trick. I think atmospherics are a huge deal in video game landscapes. You know, the quality of light, the nature of the light, the music. Is a big part of that, even though it is not technically part of the landscape, quote unquote, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think about a lot of times when I think of something as being beautiful in a game, it's also a little unsettling.
Yeah.
I know that makes me sound like I'm trying to be like American McGee or some shit, but like, you know, the Shrine of Amana is very beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
It's also scary.
Yes.
Like there's kind of alien flora and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times for things like this, I will do this kind of trick where I'll go through a level and everything, but it is just literally to give my brain something to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's not to relax. The thing I do when I have to relax is an old guided meditation thing where I imagine myself on top of a mountain and I think down through the mountain into the earth, you know, and just think downwards.
Yeah.
Into a thing, like feel like I am on extremely solid ground.
Yes.
You know, taking stock of everything that is below me, holding me up. I've never associated that specific thing with video games.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I do this all the time, walking through zones in EverQuest or even just in real life. Like, oh, you know, I can do a mental walkthrough of my old, like, middle school. It was a big, spooky old building, right?
Yeah. That kind of thing is useful.
Yes.
For keeping the brain away.
Yeah.
We're shutting that fucker up.
Asshole. Oh. Tom writes, hey guys. I've been staying away from Cyberpunk 2077 because of bad press from its initial launch. But after the good press from the 2.0 update and the release of its DLC, I gave it a shot, and it ended up being one of the best games I played in 2023. Any thoughts on this game? Do you think you two will cover it for WoW? I think it would be a great game for the WoW treatment, as it dips into a lot of genres, shooter, RPG, immersive sim, etc. Comes with some controversy and has, in my opinion, best in class elements. Thank you.
I personally am very interested in Cyberpunk 2020 or 2077. I was, even when it came out. It was just a question of time.
Yeah.
Playing it, and now with everyone being like, it's good now, I'm super interested.
Yeah.
It's just about finding the time.
Mm-hmm.
I have no doubt at all that we will do it for the show at some point.
Yeah.
It's just carving out episodes and time to play.
Mm-hmm.
Is how I feel about it. I don't know where you're at on that.
No, pretty much exactly that. Yeah, it would need to be it would take up a whole 4 week month or 5 week month.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. If only there was a month in which we did that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, sometimes we get a December that only has three usable slots we can use, right?
Well, or something else is just, you know, on the, you know, more exciting.
Yes.
You know, we only has a few usable slots, or we want to switch things up.
Mm-hmm.
because we'd done something else like that more recently.
Yeah.
You know, this is, we talked about moving, kind of erasing some of those month guidelines and doing things in other parts of the year.
Yeah.
This would be a really hard one to do that with because it's so long.
Yes.
Like we have some two-parters that we can do during the year and plan to and have, but a four-parter is hard just to stick in the middle of the year, from a business perspective.
Mm-hmm.
From an art perspective, it's great.
Yeah.
I love it. I love like digging into a thing.
Yeah.
We basically put that amount of time into Age of Empires 2 and got 1 week of content.
Yeah.
You know, what I like to do, the part of it that makes it hard for business though, is if somebody is not interested in that game, they check out for a whole month instead of a whole
episode. And who knows if they come back on the other side of it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a hard kind of thing to do. So we do like doing that. That doesn't mean we're not going to do it. It just means it's a thing we try to keep our powder dry on a little bit, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Andrew says, so I recently played Patrick's Paradox, and it's so much better than I even thought it would be. But as it is in the very controversial genre of Sokoban-like, it's hard to recommend, even if those weren't poison. Can you think of any games you find amazing that will probably never get much widespread appreciation due to being in an oft-disliked genre?
Well,
that's a good question.
It's Patrick's Parabox, not Paradox, just so people know which specific
they got
one.
Me.
Oh, no, I'm just more.
No, not you. I mean the creator of the game.
Yes.
With their wordplay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Got one over on me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a good question. You know?
Yeah. I mean, the one that comes to mind is not because of genre, but because of the way it is delivered. Plants vs. Zombies 2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good one. Nobody wants to play a free game that has money you can pay.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's, you know, a good game.
Right.
Generally, like there are things like that, then they tend not to be. Sokoban is uniquely odious thing that transcends decades.
Yeah,
you know, like other things are trends, so like there are things that have roguelike or deck builder mechanics or something like that, which are kind of in vogue now but are facing a backlash a little bit, that get hard to recommend.
Yeah,
you know, because of that a little bit. Like if I play a game that I think you would really dig, I will tell you because we're adults.
Yes.
But for the purposes of the question, I can also imagine a world where I'm like, you know, I think Cole would like this, but I know Cole is cool on this genre.
Yes.
You know, as a thing. But that has more to do with like transitory backlashes and stuff, as opposed to something, you know, like Sokoban, the one step up from Towers of Hinoe that somehow birthed the genre.
Right, right.
You know, as a thing.
Yeah. That's probably about as much of an answer as I have on that.
Yeah, I don't have a good example, sadly.
Popo Fashosho writes, if you could erase one game from existence due to its influence on the gaming industry, what game would it be?
That's a dangerous question.
Well, everybody knows what your answer is going to be. So.
No, it could be lots of things.
Okay.
What do you think it is?
Metal Gear.
Well, you could have said Dragon Quest. You could have said Shenmue. Like, there's so many things that are my answer.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I don't feel like Metal Gear is that influential. I just don't like that it's popular.
Yeah.
You know, you don't get a lot of Metal Gear likes.
True.
You know, yeah, I don't know what it would be, because at some point somebody will do something that, you know, every one of those genres I hate has something I like in it.
Yeah.
You know, like an entry that's important to me, or somebody has done something interesting with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like my, you know, I'd want to say Shenmue for birthing the non-interactive, you know, the you get to walk around.
Yeah.
But, you know, and talk to everybody as a mechanic.
Yeah. The like the simulationless life sim thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's a perfect way to put it. Like there's no simulation in this at all. There's no stakes.
No.
But it's kind of a life sim. But everyone acts like it's simulating everything except for life.
Yeah.
Like nobody acts like a person. You know, everyone is a weird sign that just says the same wooden line delivery over and over.
But if you don't have Shenmue, do you have Yakuza?
I know. That's the tricky thing. So I don't know. And like, yeah, so it's kind of hard to say. And then there are games that I love that I would never erase that I do think have had kind of irritating influence.
Yeah,
right? Like, yeah. I love Dark Souls, but like, it's hard to say that has been a net, you know, say for certain.
Mm-hmm.
It is arguable that has had a bad influence, I think.
Yeah.
Like, I think I would still side on it not having a bad influence, but I think I would hear the argument.
Yeah, I can, you know, think of the same thing for Silent Hill 2, right?
Oh, yeah. You That's know, a good, just, yeah.
But I wouldn't erase it because it's made a bunch of good stuff, too. It's hard, right?
Well, and because it's Silent Hill 2. You don't want to erase the original.
No, not at all.
Thing here. So it's like you either get rid of something good that you love that people took the wrong lessons from, or you get rid of something you hate that some people did something interesting with.
Yeah.
You know, I don't like Richard Kelly's The Box.
I don't know if I would erase like whatever was Patient Zero for the particular flavor of like live service. Your everything has a season pass, battle pass, randomized whale hunting shit. Like, I don't know if that's like, you know, Modern Warfare 3 or whatever that had like profile EXP and, you know, double XP weekends if you bought the right kind of Mountain Dew right time. Like that is, I would erase the pox of that business practice, you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Even though that's that goes across many genres.
Yes. Yeah.
You know? Yeah. It's really tricky, you know? And then like, again, since I don't like, you know, the idea of Dragon Quest being that it took more complicated games and streamlined them to make them simpler is something that in principle I don't like, but I did like it as a kid.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know if I would want to take that away from myself. Like right now, I don't like that is still influential. This idea of, you know, let's take complicated systems and streamline them and get rid of things about them. I don't like that. But as an adult,
yeah,
you know, so it's a really tough question to ask and answer.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. I don't know if it was tough to ask. We'd have to ask about Pashosha.
Let us know.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, let us know. Andrew says, there's an early episode of The Simpsons where Homer introduces a reluctant, book-smart Barney to beer. In just a few seconds, Barney transforms from a fit, smart athlete to the monstrous drunk we know him as today. The best part is when Barney drunkenly asks the beer, where have you been all my life? This is the Mr. Plow episode, by the way. I just watched this.
It begins.
It begins.
Well, that's Deep Space Homer, but yeah.
Yeah. He didn't say it begins as we're doing all that.
Right.
That's how I felt playing Into the Breach. I was reluctant to try it at first, even skipped the WoF episode as it just didn't seem like my kind of thing. But after grabbing it on sale last week, I was so into it. Totally hooked. Where have you been all my life? Do you guys have any games like that that you either were reluctant to try or just weren't on your radar that you immediately loved and wondered how the hell you lived without it?
No, Frostpunk. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, I knew that I liked city builders, but I hadn't fucked around with one for a while, basically since SimCity. And that
it's also, yeah. I mean, that's a different genre than SimCity.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like survival city builder is a very specific thing.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The closest thing I have to that, and this is not a genre cause there's nothing like it really, but Teardown. And that's a weird thing where like, I loved Teardown when we played it the first time, but I remember feeling, I even saying cooler feels like an overstatement. I like it a lot more now that I replayed it.
Yes.
I think it was partly a right game, right time thing. And partly, me knowing what to expect.
Yeah.
But I slurped it the fuck up.
Oh God. It's so fucking good.
It's a really,
I love
really
it
excellent
so goddamn
game.
Much.
It's an excellent video game. and it's, you know, it's such a good idea. It's really good. That's probably the closest thing I can think of.
Yeah.
You know, I also had that a little bit with Into the Breach too.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, fuck, man. But then they, some of these are hard because unlike beer, where there's multiple different beers after you have a beer, some of these, there isn't really a thing like
there's
that.
There's not really another Teardown. Yeah.
There's not really another Into the Breach.
Uh-huh.
You know, like the one thing you can say is survival city sims, you know, there's like Surviving Mars. Like there are survival city builders.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but there are not Into the Breaches, there are not Teardowns.
Yeah.
You know, so it'd be like if Homer gave Barney the one beer that existed.
Oh no, you drink it, it's gone.
Yeah, you drink our legacy.
Yeah. You forgot that effervescent is to ebullient as dyspeptic is to lachrymose for no reason.
Gourmand has become the voluptuary.
Yeah. Oh gosh. Ben writes, "Hey guys, first time posting here. Bonfireside Chat was the first podcast I listened to, and I've been making my way through the wafts of my favorite topics and games, aka you guys are great. Thank you." What do you think FromSoft will do after Elden Ring, and what game would you want to see most? My friend and I would love another game with Sekiro or Bloodborne's gameplay and style, but can you guys think of any new directions From could try?
I have it on good authority that they're actually doing a DLC for Elden Ring instead.
Yeah.
And I don't want to leak it here.
No.
But I will. It comes out in June.
Gary, you're going to get us killed.
I know. I'm going to get us murdered by From Death Squads.
Yeah.
The Dark Wraiths. I want the opposite of what you and your friends want. Non-derogatory. You know, I understand it feels like it's been a long time since we've had a Sekiro or Bloodborne style game. From my mind, we had a blip after kind of a run of those.
Yeah.
With Dark Souls 3, Bloodborne, Sekiro, even though that's a gradient, right? Like Sekiro is faster than Bloodborne, which is faster than Dark Souls 3.
Right.
But I really, really like what they did with Elden Ring. And I would like to see, something that is a similar freedom of approach, not necessarily open world like that, but similar freedom of approach in situations and builds. And I would like to have a new and weird theming as opposed to a medieval Europe kind of theme and opposed to a medieval Japan theme. It would be really cool to explore a new thing. Like they did with Bloodborne.
Yeah.
You know, like you know, a gothic. That was really cool. You know, give me a different kind of set of genre markers.
Please.
But give me the Elden Ring approach to difficulty and player expression.
Yeah. My actual answer is pretty much the same as yours. Just have them make something they feel, you know, would be good. You know, I'm probably going to be into whatever they put out. My, like, oh, what would you want to see kind of thing? I would like for them to commit you know, business suicide by putting out something informed by Kingsfield or Echo Knight. They went back to Armored Core and were rewarded very handsomely. They could do the same. They could go back further. Yeah.
Yeah. I would love to see, just while we're experimenting with something, be a true sicko in terms of slowing things down. I wonder what a turn-based FromSoft game would be like.
Yeah.
I mean, we have those, right? Like, we have...
Eternal Ring. Not Eternal Ring.
A Lost Odyssey now. yeah, that one.
Yeah.
It might be Lost Odyssey, or that might be a different one, though. That might be the Square one. It's an anonymous 360-era JRPG. name thing. But have them take the lessons they've learned and the kind of, like, mechanical rigor and attention to detail and stuff and do something, like, turn-based or tactical or card-based or something like that. I think it'd be really neat.
You're thinking of Evergrace.
Evergrace and Eternal Ring are the same. I'm thinking of the one that there's two of them.
Yeah, no.
It's a card-based JRPG.
Oh, the card-based JRPG. That was Lost Kingdoms.
Yeah. Lost Kingdoms. Thank you. Yes. That's what I was thinking of.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would be, I would love to see them do something like that. That would be cool.
Yeah.
One more game question?
Yeah, let's do that.
Then move on. Dylan says, "Hey guys, I have a question that's mostly directed towards Cole. Hey Cole, over the years, you've talked a lot about your time with EverQuest and MMOs back in the 2000s. Like you, I played a ton of MMOs back in the day, specifically RuneScape. I used to feel really bad about the aggregate months of my life spent as an adolescent in that game, but over the years, I've come to have more affection for how it helped me socialize with friends all over the world, get into writing via articles for a fan site, and have something to do as I grew up in a fairly alienating household. How do you look back on your time spent in EverQuest and MMOs? How has it influenced your approach to gaming today? I know it's a general question, but I think about it sometimes, since MMOs encourage an astronomical time commitment compared to any other genre, and sometimes I wrestle with what I have spent with them. Gary, I know you've expressed a distaste towards MMOs, but have you experienced any similar feelings with other games?"
Yeah.
How do you look back on your time?
Oh, fondly. You know, there's a reason I've got those books, you know, from like, you know, just EverQuest strategy guides that I sometimes, you know, flip through. I keep the EverQuest Atlas like next to my bed to flip through sometimes.
Just in case you need it.
Just in case I need it. You know?
But where's it at?
The maps in that are functionally useless. However, each of them has like a really good like description and like a little bestiary on it too. It's basically all like in-world fiction stuff, which is real neat. I don't regret the time. I really enjoyed, you know, being in the guild that I was in. Again, kind of like you, getting to be, you know, fake internet friends with people from all over the world at a pretty important time for me, you know, just like, what was it, 2001? I would have been like in ninth grade, right? Mm. You know, especially like learning to socialize with older people too, you know? It was pretty neat. And then just in general, like, I don't know, it's a bunch of stuff that I don't do. I don't play multiplayer games. I don't play MMOs, but like EverQuest specifically got me really hooked on the idea of like a big hostile world that doesn't want to explain itself to you. There's like a direct line through that to, you know, like Morrowind, to Dark Souls, to Final Fantasy 12, to blah blah blah, right? You know, like, just it has these commonalities with stuff that I really enjoy. It was neat, you know, I really enjoy doing it, and I always have an old install of like one of the custom servers sitting on my Windows computer talking to me like the Green Goblin mask. So
yes, trying to tempt you back into the
yeah
life.
Yeah,
you know, beating you up if you try to leave.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have that kind of experience. Like, I've tried MMOs. I told that story a bunch of times.
No,
did not work for me. I've tried several times too.
Yeah.
The Secret World came out and I'm like, oh, this seems like it's for me. And then it's still an MMO.
Right.
I do am nostalgic for that kind of attitude towards time and that excessive time.
Yes.
That came with just kind of like not having to consider time as a resource.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's kind of like two ways you can look at that. Like, you can regret, you can think of time as a resource like you do now and regret what you spent, or you can be nostalgic for the time when you didn't worry about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that time's gone.
Yep.
I don't want to spend regretting it. Who knows what would be different now.
Yeah.
If I didn't spend time and sub in MMOs for anything else. My Team Fortress 2 server.
Yeah, yeah.
My clan, you know, that I was in. The engineer clan.
At the same time that I was doing my EverQuest stuff, I was also in a Team Fortress Classic clan, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And maybe our clans are at war and we didn't even know.
No, it's Classic, but not, it wasn't 2.
Team Fortress 2? Yeah, it's Classic. I barely played Team Fortress 2.
Oh, you said Team Fortress 2 server.
Oh,
yeah,
shit.
Yeah, sorry.
I meant Team Fortress Classic.
Yes, yeah.
It's
possible, yeah. You ever go up against the Birds of Prey?
If I remember, it'd be one of the most amazing things my brain ever did.
It really would.
If so, they should bisect me like the hard way and then study me for eternity if I remembered the different people we fought against 20 years ago. 25 years ago.
Yep.
At this point. Like, people lived and died since the Birds of Prey squawked their last squawk.
God. Let's move on to life questions.
Yeah, let's do. I think this is you.
This is me, yes. Jordan or Maya writes, if y'all got to have a time enough at last scenario where the world ends and you two and your loved ones remained, but you didn't have to worry about pleasing anybody or making a living or any of that biz, what would y'all get up to? Pipe dream things you could do with the rest of your time. No horrible Rod Sterling surprises either. All glasses remain intact. Plus, that guy from the Twilight Zone should have just gone to America's Best and stolen new glasses. He has unlimited time to find his prescription.
That's true.
True.
You know, if the fifth season of Breaking Bad, if he can come and just find Walt glasses, just like, here's a bunch of them. One of them will work. then Burgess Meredith could have fucking done it.
Yeah.
I think about this all the time.
Mm-hmm.
This is a dark dream of mine. And I have a big pile of retirement ideas,
mm-hmm.
Things like that. This is you know, going through you know, all my big collection of source books.
Yeah.
You know, reading them more than just like casually flipping through when I have a minute. Only playing video games I want to play.
Yeah.
Is, you know, that sound good at the time.
Mm-hmm.
is a crazy appealing
thing
to me. Yeah. I would like give a shot to all the Spider-Man software games. Mm-hmm. I've had those forever on my list. I have no specific answer to that. You know, I would just do a lot of things I don't do now,
mm-hmm.
You know, because of work or because of time stuff. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It would be great.
Yeah. I feel like I would do, you know, more of the stuff that I do a little bit now that I wish that I could do more, you know?
Yeah.
You know, so the answers are pretty similar to yours. Like, oh, like probably like, you know, buckle down and really learn an instrument, right? Continue to
at Abbey Road Studio.
Yeah.
You know, the other thing too is in this scenario it's both of us. Yeah. So we can meet up there, mm-hmm. like that yesterday's movie or whatever. and like both learn we can make an album that only our loved ones would ever listen to.
Because they're the only ones left alive.
Yeah. We could speed run the Beatles.
Yeah.
In a hyperbolic time chat chamber.
Yeah. Do more like building, crafting stuff, right? Yeah, workshop kind of shit.
I build a lot of Legos.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just like your answer, climb on board something with like Paradox strategy games or Anno, just bye bye forever, everybody.
Yeah, I have that feeling. It's so interesting, right? So like I think about this is a long story, but it's gonna get not a long story, but okay. This takes a roundabout way to get here. I was talking to Will, mm-hmm. My friend, co-host of Everything to Guppy,
mm-hmm.
And who just put out a preview article about Final Fantasy VII Rebirth 2.
Yes,
and was talking about it, and he was just like, you know, kind of telling me about it. And I said something about like, I said, yeah, like, you know, I haven't played the first one. I bet you we will for the show at some point, but I'm not in a hurry. And he's like, oh, you know, old Resist the Zeitgeist Gary.
Mm.
And I was thinking about that. And I was thinking like, I think a lot of people do resist a zeitgeist of things they're not interested in.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like there's some of those popular video games of all time are like the, you know, Madden games and sports games and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe bats an eye if you don't play those.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about how when we did Age of Empires 2, how I had this moment where it was like a window into a life,
mm-hmm.
where I was like, you know, I like this a lot. It would be fun to get good at this. This is an embarrassment of content,
mm-hmm.
but it does a really good job of taking hours that are in front of me and putting them behind me in a way that I find satisfying and pleasant.
Yeah.
This could be my life, you know, as a thing. And that made me think about the way that relates to this question is thinking not just about the normal way in which there are things I should be playing because of work.
Mm-hmm.
But if I didn't have that idea at all,
yeah,
like there was no sense of like, I should play this because it's important and maybe it's kind of good.
Mm-hmm.
Like I could literally just be like, this is what I want in my gut and I do it. There's no sense of should.
Mm-hmm.
Like that is what I associate with this question prompt.
Yeah.
Like there would never be any should or any kind of external pressure or anything
mm-hmm.
to be interested in anything that I was not interested in.
Yeah.
And that sounds really bleak and incurious. And it's not that I'm incurious, right? Like I, you know, getting into, if I did go fall down one of these holes, if I fell down an Age of Empires 2 hole, or you fell down a Crusader Kings hole or whatever,
mm-hmm.
that's curiosity at work.
It is.
That's not something you know very much about. And that's a huge topic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just the rejecting the idea that I have to be curious about all and be a dilettante that picks out little tiny pieces of everything, even when I have to push past resistance.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yes, I would get rewarded, but I'll also get rewarded if I then fell into a Spiderweb software hole or you fell into a Crusader Kings. Like, I'm getting rewarded regardless.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's a long way of saying stuff that I've said for a long time.
Yeah,
you know, like I did other stuff instead.
Yes.
You know, you get the same place kind of regardless,
mm-hmm.
but it's, I love that idea of being free of internal and external pressure of what I should consume,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah. I don't know that I have anything to add on top of that. It would be nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just, it's the dream.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what retirement would mean to me.
Yeah.
You know, it'd be awesome. Nobody would have to hear me complain about, you know, console RPGs ever again, because I just wouldn't talk about them. I wouldn't mm-hmm. know about them.
Yeah,
it'd be amazing. Like it would just be gone for my life. Nobody would have to hear it. At least of all me. You know, at least of all Liv.
Yeah. Oh no.
And she doesn't have to hear.
Well, yeah.
I'm a good husband. Devin says, Hey guys, Big Dog here. Woof, 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 sack pack, sack pack. Saw this question on Reddit. Are there anything in video games you pay special attention to due to a previous occupation? I work in insurance claims, so I routinely seek leaks, fires, break-ins, etc. So whenever I play games, I'm always looking at the construction and layout of places, just because I do it regularly. Hope you both had a fabulous Christmas. Looking forward to WoF and all the other podcasts in the new year. Thank you, Devin.
Thank you.
Thanks, Big Dog. I don't think I've ever had a played a game that interfaced with a previous job very much. Really? The main thing is I'll play games that portray being in a band as ludicrous. You know, the ludicrous fantasy of being in a band in video games is not realistic.
Not at all, no.
To life. That is the main thing I see. Instead, what will happen is I'll start applying video games to real life, and that's very classic, but like imagining how I'd skate around a landscape, or like after we did GTA 5.
Oh yeah.
You know, Liv would be like waiting patiently at a stoplight, and I'd be like, you just go through right there. Like, there's nothing there. You could just drive forward. There's nothing in front of you. Just get to the place we got to go.
No laws of man, only laws of physics.
Yeah, exactly. And laws of tree. The, you know, the only in law of nature. Yeah, so that happens, but not very often do I compare job or life experience to video games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as you know, I also haven't had very many jobs. Too, you know, so like there's retail, the radio job, and the marketing job. It in the off chance that I see like audio equipment in a in a game, if you end up going to a radio station or whatever, I'll always take a look and see if I can recognize like what they chose to model stuff after, you know. Mm-hmm. Just like, oh, the old man radio broadcaster in Alan Wake 2 uses a Heil PR40. Like, they very clearly modeled after that. So so your Chapel writes, do you guys have any interest that you're genuinely a little embarrassed by? I've been really enjoying Dan Carlin's Tough History for Boys lately, even though there's an element of machismo to it that makes me cringe.
Sure. Yeah. I talked about this a little bit while watching Brian Brushwood stuff on YouTube. And his series, his Hacking the System series, mm-hmm. which is about scams and hacks. Like, yeah. I scams and hacks are interesting to me. Mm-hmm. Near to wells and things like that will always be interesting to me. But the tone of them is always embarrassing as shit.
Mm-hmm.
Just to an extreme degree.
Yeah.
Stage magic. The tone of that's not good. Yeah. But I love stage magic.
But how embarrassed are you of that, though? Because you talk about it. Right.
I talk about it all the time. Yeah. I don't, I mean, I'm genuinely embarrassed about it in that the way, like, I imagine, like, the question says, I've been enjoying this, but the aesthetics of it makes me, the machismo makes me cringe. Mm-hmm. Like, it does make me cringe every once in a while.
Yeah. If I'm ever, you know, so I don't seek this out myself, but I will, greatly enjoy watching like HGTV stuff. You know, like those shows, you know, either, you know, House Hunters, you know, the hated House Hunters, or any of like the flipping kind of shit or whatever, you know, like that is indefensible as content, but also
yes.
I just kind of enjoy it, but I don't necessarily feel like apologizing for it either.
No.
You know,
to what degree embarrassing is operative.
Yeah.
And this is variable, right? Like, mm-hmm. we're grownups. We don't get embarrassed about our guilt, and we talk about our guilty pleasure shit for the term of art that is that term,
mm-hmm.
you know, without actually feeling guilt,
mm-hmm.
All the time.
Yeah.
You know this?
Mm-hmm.
Liv and I have been really into this guy on YouTube called Dancing Bacons, who does videos where he talks about snack foods and vending machine experiences in Japan.
Ooh.
And I saw the wildest fucking thing I've ever seen, which is a restaurant that you eat in front of a river, and then there are these chutes, these like water slides, essentially bamboo water slides,
mm-hmm.
where they shunt like plorps of ramen noodles at you, and you have to catch them to eat them.
That's not a restaurant. It's Double Dare. That's Double Dare.
It's very Double Dare. It's Double Dare. I believe that it's sanitary because, of course, it is. You know, it's a business and stuff. It is the most unsanitary looking thing I've ever seen. Like, have you tried to? And it adds this sense of like pressure to eating that I would never want.
Yeah.
Like that if I happen to be eating a noodle, the next noodle comes around, I just don't get that noodle. You know, stuff like that. And like, that is, it's silly and it's low nutrient content, you know, but it's just fascinating stuff.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Moving on to media questions. Is this me or you?
This is you.
Mike McKeister Krieg says, have either of you watched the AMC series The Terror? It shares some cast with the Chernobyl series, as well as a lot of the atmosphere and dread. I think this would be a great fit for an unfilmable episode, though I must admit this is selfish as a request because it is 10 episodes long, and I'm particularly interested in Arctic exploration and tragedy. So the series and the book it's based on and the actual historical event the book is based on are very exciting to me. This is on the big board. This is on me and Liv's list of things to watch at some point. And I started listening to the audio book of this. I ended up falling off of it because I think that it would work better as a regular book.
Yeah.
There's just like a whole lot of the guy droning on about different like British names.
Yeah.
That make it hard as an audiobook. Like Lieutenant Phillips. And I'm like, every time I love hearing Lieutenant, but like, fuck, man, I can't remember which one this is.
I'm here for Lieutenant. Everything else, no thank you,
yeah,
sir.
Yeah, everything. Lieutenant. Yeah, 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 yeah. After this, fuck this. But it was really interesting, and I love that bleakness, and I love based on a true story, tragedy, shit like that.
Yeah. I'm interested in it. It's just a matter of, I don't know about unfilmable for that, because if we were going to do a 10 episode thing for that, probably True Detective season one would be the thing that I would go for, you know. So
yeah, there's no reason not to do both other than that we do that show once a month.
Yes.
And there's other stuff ahead of it, you know, like there's just other stuff we want to talk about. That show's not going anywhere. We still like doing it. So your patience will be rewarded.
Yes.
Eventually we'll get to things.
P300 writes, could you perhaps give some book tips? I remember you talking about good coffee table books, but I was binge listening and don't remember what episode it was.
Big shout out to the entire series from Bitmap Books. Those are my favorite coffee table books. I have all of their non-book or non-art books. I have. So this is like the complete CRPG, the complete JRPG, Go Straight, which is about belt scrollers, I'm Too Young to Die, which is about shooters. These are history, like gaming kind of history books in a way. Short hardcore gaming 101-esque articles about important games in the medium, interspersed with interviews and big beautiful illustrations and some context. And they are perfect and I love them. Same thing with the hardcore gaming 101 book, specifically the complete guide to graphic adventures.
Love that thing.
One of my favorite possessions. Anytime can pick that up and just flip to a random page and have like a really nice time. Kurt Colada is a hero. And doing God's work.
That's absolutely what we were talking about from a coffee table book kind of scenario. And like book tips, just looking at my Audible here, stuff that I've listened to recently, it's all depressing politics shit. but also
is the tip, don't do what Donnie Do does.
This could be more clear. Oh, but just like I enjoyed Kill Anything That Moves by Nick Terse, talking about the atrocities of the Vietnam War. See Like a State, which is about racial oppression broadly, you know, systematized stuff like that. So just throwing that in there, always something plenty depressing to listen to or read. Democracy in Chains is really good, kind of origins of anti-communism, reactionary right stuff.
I've been reading Blood Meridian. I'm not saying that to one-up your bleakness. An Evening Redness in the West. it is good. So far, but I haven't finished it, so it's hard to recommend.
It's slow going.
It is slow going. It's dense. Ingrid writes in, hi there, just writing in a dispatch media question for Gary. What are your favorite Flying Nun Records bands and experiences? It's always awesome to see music and artists from New Zealand being appreciated and enjoyed outside of New Zealand. We chatted a bit on the Slack around the same time that Hamish Kilgore passed away, rest in peace. I'm curious to know your history of Flying Nun stuff. That's awesome. Thank you, Ingrid. I am a really, really big fan of the Clean and the Chills are my two kind of cornerstone Flying Nun bands. I like the Bats. I like there are other bands, you know, from that that I like. Mm-hmm. Like God, the name is Go West, Go Purple, Go West. The name is escaping right now because I got bad brain worms.
Mm-hmm.
I have a lot of this stuff on a compilation, which I know makes me a poser, like a big like 3-disc Flying Nun Records
mm-hmm.
thing, with the Clean and the Chills as the two bands I've gone the deepest on. And the in terms of experience, I've seen the Chills twice now live. They still got it. It's kind of amazing.
Mm-hmm.
The new records are good and the shows are good. Both of which were great concerts. Small venue because they're a small band.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like at this point, they're not super popular around in the States. So I got to see them in very intimate spaces.
Oh.
You know, not intimate like, you know, MTV Unplugged, but relatively small rooms.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was great. But yeah, my whole band is super obsessed with that stuff. We covered Big Soft Punch was the first song my band covered,
mm-hmm.
Modridge covered live and everything. Like that stuff is very near and dear to my heart.
Yeah.
So I put that on to remind myself that music can sound like that because it is naive in a way that I find really beautiful.
Nice.
Non-derogatory.
Yeah. I've always been more partial to My Mother, the Car records.
Yes. yeah. No, I liked it.
Okay. Yeah. Oh gosh. Sorry, I don't have anything to add on that besides just a joke. I've not listened to those bands.
It's a niche.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. Casey writes, I've been recently watching a playlist of old X-Play episodes from the beginning for depression reasons, and was interested in your history with their semi-critical process. Having most of my game critique education coming from WoF, I think it's so wild to compare their critiques to your own and how games journalism held wanton violence and edgy aesthetics in such high regard back then. Thank you for reading my question. You guys definitely deserve a 5 out of 5.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Can I tell you a funny thing that happened at band practice yesterday?
Yes.
That the end of that reminded me of, Andrew was talking about how funny it would be if, you know, when Alice in Chains was a band before that happened, if you put up on the marquee, you put Alice ... in chains exclamation point.
Alice, wait for it.
Yeah, wait for it. In chains. Yeah. We start only referring to that band as that. I don't know X-Play very well.
No.
I assume this is like GamePro TV, but after my time.
I think X-Play is what Jeff Keighley got us start on.
Okay.
I forget. X-Play is a TV program. Yeah, we didn't get G4. And I think that by the time we got it, it was technically part of Spike TV. Oh, it started as GameSpot TV. Okay.
Okay. I have vague memories of this, but I think at the time this was on, like looking at this now, we're looking at like the mid 2000s.
Yeah.
I don't think I had access to it either. Which I understand is a disappointing answer, but I don't think I have very much history with it.
Yeah. Anything that I have seen has been, you know, in a clip of something on a YouTube or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, my assumption based on what I know is it would be very hard to go back to, especially because of the games and stuff that were coming, out around that time. Right. Like the idea of, you know, watching an X-Play review of The Suffering just kind of makes me want to like draw my head into my ribcage like a turtle.
Even though I want to hear a review of that from like a contemporary person.
Yes.
Yeah. Very much. Like, I'm sure there's interesting stuff in there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we should do The Fucking Suffering, you know, as a thing, because like it would be fascinating.
Uh-huh.
But having a like, you know, this is badass.
Yeah.
Would be difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So yeah. Sorry, I can't give you much. I just don't have an awful lot of experience with it.
I watched a little bit of GameSpot TV, but I don't think it was specifically X-Play.
Right.
From time to time, but it's very vague.
Mm-hmm.
This is like during my drinking days too. I like to cop out. I just also, I think I was drinking a lot in my mid-20s.
There's a lot of loops of tape missing. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Scene missing. Yeah. Moving on to show questions.
Mm-hmm.
Does that work? We got a little bit of a timetable today, just a little bit.
Yes. Yes.
The Eric says, is there a possibility that you guys would cover robot jocks for your Stuart Gordon appreciation podcast on Filmable? I know it doesn't exactly fit the format, but it's incredibly cheesy and has a ton of fun practical effects. My brother and I used to watch our home recorded VHS copy at least once a week as kids. So Robot Jocks and Space Truckers are two movies I keep seeing trailers for. Before old VHSs, since me and Liv have gotten to VHSs, and they look fucking sick.
Yep.
They look like the best movies of all time to me. It wouldn't make sense for Unfilmable, but I wouldn't put past us on a long enough timeline having Unfilmable, and this would take a long time. So when I say long enough timeline, I want anyone to get scared.
Yeah.
Moving, you know, expanding the format where there's like 1 month a year, we just do something that's not horror.
Yeah.
Or something like that. Like we do a holiday, April Fool's Month or something like that.
Yeah.
There's already things that we kind of push the boundary for that, but everything has been plausibly horror. I feel like Robot Jocks is not plausibly horror.
No, not at all. Yeah.
But I would like an excuse to talk about, you know, stuff like that from time to time.
You know, just do a real big appreciation cast about Pee-wee's Big Adventure, right?
Yeah, I would love to. Yeah. I, you know, perfect film. You know, and then there, and so many of those things can be arguable that it's kind of nice, right? Like, there's no universe in which that show we don't talk about Gremlins 2 at some point,
right?
Gremlins 2 has horror elements. There are gremlins in it. You know, like you can justify it.
Oh, you know, there's no limit to what I can justify, Gary.
Exactly. There's no limit to what I can justify, Cloud. yeah. You know, or something like, there's something else. I lost it. But it's like, it's kind of horror related, you know, and we can do something like that. But I was going to say Beetlejuice.
Yeah.
Beetlejuice is a perfect film, I think. And that is kind of spooky. You know, I feel like we could do it if we did it within a break. Robot Jocks is a harder stretch, but hopefully this show will become more malleable.
Right.
On a long enough timeline.
Yeah.
But similar to the question about the terror, we just have lots of other stuff we want to do. Like every month we take turns picking things for that. And every month that it's my turn, I'm chomping at the bit. I'm not like, what should we do?
Yeah. I could run in three different directions at any given month.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like we have like years of stuff that we can think of, and we like doing the show. It's not going anywhere. So again, your patience may be rewarded.
Yes.
For that.
One more show question, then do lightning round, you think?
Yeah.
Yeah. Alex writes, a very early Duckfeed memory I had that wasn't Bonfireside Chat related was the summer RPG poll that was eventually won by Suikoden 2. I remember that Persona 3 was on that poll as well. And when you guys were talking about a question that referenced Cruelty Squad and that episode that wasn't, it got me thinking. What are some episodes of Duckfeed content that either of you think about having almost been, or stuff that had to be canceled like Cruelty Squad for whatever reason, close to having been recorded? What old poll stuff has simply vanished into the wind instead of being stuff that got picked up later?
I don't remember stuff that was on polls.
No, neither do
I. That we didn't do.
Yeah.
But I do the trivia answer for this. So Cruelty Squad, Fear and Hunger was on the thing. And then the deep cut for this is Legacy of Kain Blood Omen.
That was the only one I was going to say. Yeah, that was good. Like, that was super early. Why did we not do that? Was it availability reason? It wasn't on PS. We thought it was on PSN, and then it wasn't.
It was on PSN. It was, for some reason, and this is bonkers now to think about, like we go back and do it at some point.
Yeah.
It is a hateful and irritating game.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there are cool things about that game, but it is hateful and irritating. There are really long load times and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It didn't occur to, and I'll put this on me. It didn't occur to me to try to emulate it and have, you know, increased computer speeds and have the ability to save state and kind of ameliorate some of the shitty parts to get to the cool parts.
Yeah.
Just playing it on PSP. I was playing it on my PSP Go when we were planning to do it. And just between the fail states and the load times, it was sanity blasting.
Yeah. We pivoted pretty quick to do Abe's Odyssey, I think.
Yes.
On that one, yeah.
Which was a little bit sanity blasting, but in a different way.
Yeah.
You know, the idea, I think that earlier on, we may have been more committed to doing things on original hardware.
Yeah.
You know, or more emulations shy. And we've given up that specific stupidness.
I think very specifically, it just at that time, because it's hard to forget that this was 13 years ago. At that time, it was not as dependable to emulate PS1 stuff as well. Yeah.
I don't even remember trying.
Yeah.
To do it, you know, but it is also, I was 13 years younger. We were 13 years younger. We didn't have the same kind of thought process.
Mm-hmm.
So at some point we'll do that. With being able to get past it, like all those things that are problems with it,
mm-hmm.
all still true, but it's like a deeply charismatic game and rife for fun.
Stars Breaking Bad's Anna Gunn.
Yeah. Well, and the narration just being like, Darkstar, an important part of my arsenal. This blood magic allows me to exsanguinate from a distance. Screams may taste sweet, but even sweeter when they're on the ground. You were just like weird shit like that. It's like, hell yes. The parts of me that are sicko that appreciate that stuff have only grown in power. Yeah. You know? And my willing to use save states to get past something annoying.
Yeah,
has only grown as well.
Yeah, yeah. It has only gotten to be a better. It's only gotten better to be Blood Omen Legacy of Kain.
Exactly. Like time is smiling on you. doing the lightning round. Matt says, "What's your favorite biome? I feel modern games don't do this as much since they tend to favor realism, but I kind of miss when you would have a desert level, an ice level, an underwater level, etc. I think I'm partial to beach settings personally.
Mushroom Cave."
Mushroom Cave's really good. Yeah. That's a great answer.
Yeah.
I just beat Mario Wonder and was actually having the feeling of like, I don't miss this that much because every gimmick that's added to these things is kind of annoying.
No.
Like ice levels have great music, but I don't like ice physics.
Mm-hmm.
Underwater levels have great music, but I don't like underwater physics.
Right.
You know, I'd rather just platform. But Mushroom Cave is really good because it looks good and it's largely just platforming.
Yes.
You know, they don't change things that much. That's a really good answer.
Yeah, Mushroom Cave.
I'm going to say Haunted House.
That one was so obvious it almost wasn't worth saying.
Roasted.
Yeah. Basic ass answer. Walk up on me with that shit. Lyle writes, "Hey, fellas. A question for Cole. Does he still feel so confident about his cool demeanor in the face of Tonberries? You have to understand, they walk so slow.
They do walk really slow.
They walk really slow and their knife is so tiny. I'm fine."
No. You also walk faster than a Tonberry.
Yes.
I'm sorry I haven't told you that before in our partnership, but it's true.
Wait, why is that bad news? I do walk faster than most people.
No,
walk
it's a compliment that I haven't paid you.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. No, I just, people tried to freak me out about Tonberries. No, that's, forget it.
I also think that since I've spent my life getting stabbed by very small knives, just by like through splinters and like
cat claws,
things like that, you know, cat claws and stuff. I think I've basically built up an immunity to knives that size.
No.
I once stepped on like a belt and had it like puncture my foot, a little bit. It was horrible.
Yeah.
It was like a wide aperture.
Mm-hmm.
It made a ghastly sound, but if like that didn't kill me, a Tonberry couldn't do it.
Yeah. And just every morning I swallow a tiny knife to build up a resistance to tiny knives.
I eat it in my cereal.
Yeah. Jagged metal crustio.
Yeah, exactly. Joseph says, in a previous dispatch, it was mentioned that there was a Magic the Gathering video game whose tutorial would be a great way to get introduced to the mechanics and gameplay of the actual card game. My friends want to play MTG with me, and I've never played. Do you remember which Magic game it was? I'd love to try it out myself. These are called Duels of the Planeswalkers, and they're year-based. So it's like Magic 2012, Magic 2013, and I think they go up to 2015 or 2016.
Mm-hmm.
These are available on iOS. I want to say still, which is kind of weird because Magic is that might not still be true. I might have like a legacy download of these. They are still available on Steam. And again, I don't know if they're available to buy. You might have to pirate these.
Yeah.
But they are single player Magic the Gathering games that teach you the rules of the game.
Which of them has the tutorial video starring Rhea Seahorn?
That's the old one. That's Chandelar. That's Duels of the Planeswalkers, actually.
Okay.
The Microprose Magic the Gathering. That does not teach you how to play even a little bit. That is probably the game that I most would love to do for WoF because I think it's a really excellent video game that I will never do to you because it's just saying learn a lifestyle.
Yeah.
you know, this won't teach you. And it has a bunch of little shitty quirks that make it different than the actual game.
Oof.
You just have to have this institutional knowledge to play it.
Yeah, yeah. I'll trust you on that one.
Yeah.
Drew writes, favorite grotesque moment in a video game. I enjoy the intro infection scene of Baldur's Gate 3. Go, little tadpole, go.
I love to go, little tadpole, go.
Yeah.
No. I feel like I have a guess of your answer.
James Sunderland reaching into the toilet.
Oh, no, that was not what I was going to guess.
I like that one because it's realistic, you know?
It is realistic.
Yeah.
I don't want to reach into a toilet.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to guess yours was going to be the burial at sea.
The eye thing is, that's more horrific than anything.
Yeah. Than favorite.
Yeah. Or the buzzsaw scene in Outlast Whistleblower is also there. There are a few, but as far as like iconic or whatever, and also just like it's grotesque but doesn't like trigger like horrible mirror neuron stuff. Yeah, there's that.
Yeah,
and also it's not a very good game, but the Strogification sequence in Quake 4 is kind of an all-timer.
I don't know that one.
Yeah.
I don't have a good answer for this.
Mm-hmm.
Off the top of my head, sadly.
No.
Gray Rain says, in another world, you two are wizards instead of podcasters. How do you decorate your new wizard's tower? Glowing crystals, skulls and dribbly candles, stuffed alligator hanging from the ceiling, secret passages, street signs and doors. Bonus question, how tempted would you be to go full on lich?
It depends on what other longevity inducing spells were there, you know. That would be the one upside of going full lich. I don't imagine that's the first bridge you cross, right?
You try other things first.
I
always assume lichdom comes with like also magic, like deep dark secret curiosity.
Yes. Yeah,
you know, stuff as well, which I think I would develop.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at some point too. So I'd probably dally in those other things until I eventually did want to go full lich, because it would dovetail really well with my other interest in like knowing all the secrets.
Yes. Yeah.
You know?
Uh-huh.
And I would go real classic. It would be skulls and dribbly candles.
Yeah. Yeah. Secret passages, meaningful trapped tomes on large, what are those? Like
lecterns.
Lecterns. Like, yeah. You know, yeah. Yeah. And, yeah. Like a big dictionary or whatever. Servant. Golem servant, you know, yeah.
Who I programmed to sound like Jimmy Kimmel, so I don't want to hang out with him, so I don't waste my time hanging out with my golem servant.
It's a little bit of a bummer that Harry Potter has kind of taken, has kind of colonized this, but like enchanted and talking paintings as well.
I love the living portraits in that. Yeah. I love that as an idea too.
Yeah,
I hate that is colonized as well.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be pretty sick if you have the power to make this happen.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, let us know.
I'm into it.
Yeah,
into it.
Mm-hmm. Let's see here. Todd McFarlane, creator Spawn, writes, have you had a chance to figure out what live shows you're planning on doing this year? Spawn was faced with this same predicament once. I'm Todd McFarlane, creator of Spawn.
Have you thought about which live shows you're going to do? Spawn has.
We have Milwaukee. Milwaukee's coming up. Yeah. We're looking at PRG again. Yeah.
Yeah, we might do Portland. There's other ones we've looked at and stuff. We don't know.
Yep.
But we're definitely doing Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
Matthew says, question for Gary. You mentioned getting back into screenshot Let's Plays recently. What are your favorites so far? Are you reading them on the LP archive, directly from the SA forums, or a mysterious third option?
Mm-hmm.
Reading them directly from the LP archive. These are so fucking, it's actually like a thing I imagine people get from WoF,
mm-hmm.
Which is a way to replay a game you don't feel like replaying.
Yeah. Yeah.
Doing the two 16-bit Shadowrun games.
Mm-hmm.
This way is probably the most recent ones that I read to completion.
Mm-hmm.
And LP Archive has that sorting. You can just sort to screenshot.
Yeah.
Let's play and just find a lot of stuff. It's pretty sick. You have to find people who are not, early 2000s shithead humor.
Right.
Weirdly, on the Let's Play thing, the humorous tag is basically a radioactive
poison.
Do not enter tag.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Every once in a while I've read one in spite of that, but it fucking sucks. I promise they're not humorous. those are the two I've done. And EVO for the SNES. Just games I liked as a kid that I know that I don't necessarily want to put up with right this second.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Matthew writes, question for both of you. If Jim Henson rose from the grave and turned you both into Muppets by biting you, what would your role be in the Muppet Show?
Screaming in a trunk for at least a little bit.
Yeah. Well, I mean, at least, when you're being transported, for sure.
Yeah. 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 And then writing letters that the Muppets would read and destroy to my wife, trying to explain to her what happened. I think that would be part of my role.
Yeah.
I love the Muppets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like all good hearted people. Thinking about this question does make me realize that it would be very exhausting. Like, it'd be super exhausting to be a Muppet.
Yes. Try
like, every Muppet, even the ones I like, are on all the fucking time.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
like,
God, shut up, Gonzo.
I just can't picture any of the Muppets just like, you know, heading out back and just like, leaning into the wall and just like shrugging their way into a reluctant smoke break, you know?
Yeah. Or like, I can't imagine a Muppet reading, you know, like try to do it. It doesn't work.
Yeah.
They have to say something, like mm-hmm. they have to comment on it and everything. They have too much energy. It'd be a lot like hanging out with kids. So I think I'd be the infamous Muppet murderer at that point. It's time they introduced a spree killer to the Muppet yeah. show.
You know, that one Muppet with the milky eye who keeps licking a blade, and every week there's yeah. one less Muppet.
Yeah, exactly. The Law Track of Muppets. Yeah.
I don't know. I'd probably be some kind of technical role, sound guy, light guy, something like that.
You'd be a Scooter.
Yeah. A Scooter's a stage manager. That's yeah.
Yeah. That seems like a technical
sound
guy. Jonathan says, since your coverage of the Garbage Pail Kids, I've been seeing them all around Portland and I hate it. So I don't like that.
They're looking for you, Gary.
I know. Like that's a horrible thing to read. So now I curse you back. What creepy or fucked up little guys or gals haunt you in your periphery? Related, was there anything from media that scared or haunted you when you were younger?
It's all stuff that I talked about before, you know, seeing Pet Cemetery way too young. Yeah.
Yeah. When I, this is more a state of mind than a specific thing. So like if I'm walking around, I'm in a very specific state of mind. I forgot my headphones.
Mm-hmm.
I will look into darkened windows and stuff. I look into everyone's house when I walk by.
Yep.
Cause if the windows are open, cause of course I do.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone does it.
No.
Otherwise don't have your windows open, you weirdos.
Mm-hmm.
If it's just dark in there, I will imagine something like just out of sight, like a flesh Bart. Or a Slender Man, or a Hereditary mom,
mm-hmm.
something like that.
Yeah. When I was in college, there was a house on my way back to the house where I lived that kept a cardboard standee of Han Solo in the front door, like in the storm door or whatever. Which is, in the daytime is a fun little geek thing. When the sun starts going down, that is just a silhouette of a man pointing a gun at you.
Yes. Yeah, I've seen that kind of thing. There are people here around here do that kind of thing too. Possibly Garbage Pail people, I don't know.
Oh gosh. Kellerak writes, it's been a while since we've taken a trip to the R-Zone zone. How are your R-Zones holding up? Are they still functional or have they finally deteriorated?
Mine's in the closet
mm-hmm.
or in storage. I don't know exactly.
Yeah.
Where? I'm pretty sure I remember to take the batteries out, so I bet you it's fine.
Yeah, it's probably fine.
I loaned it to Will. Will did a thing on the AV Club about weird handhelds at one point, and I loaned him my collection.
Yeah,
for that. So that and thegame.com.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Yeah. Yeah. Mine's in a box somewhere. It's fine.
Yeah, it's probably it'll live there for the rest of its life, most mm-hmm. likely.
Yeah.
Agonizing rectal pain asks all caps. Oh dear. Hey guys, long time, first time. Given both of you are broadly positive on the first two Ari Aster movies, I'm curious, have either of you gotten around to seeing Beau Is Afraid? Any chance we'll see an unfilmable episode on the topic? I have not watched this yet. It seems fascinating to me.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those things where the things people say they don't like about it make it really interesting to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there, I think there's probably every chance
we
do that at some point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially now that like that is, it's like an anxiety horror movie.
Yeah.
You know, it's not about supernatural things. It's about mind stuff. And we do that.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, no, same. Interested in it, just didn't see it in the theater and figured it was something we'd eventually get around to for a show. Just like so many recommendations and things people ask us about.
Yeah, it's just the thing, you know, the podcast keeps you busy, but it also stops you from doing things sometimes.
Yes.
You know, in a non, you know, derogatory way, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Let's move on to our topic.
Let's do. I think this is you. Or wait. This is me. Okay. For the topic. Andrew writes, me and my partner were talking the other night about the concept of a, quote, perfect game and whether they exist. To which the answer came within 10 seconds. Of course not, you silly toad. That's a little mean. Continuing the discussion, though, we alter the definition of perfect. We alter the definition to perfect at what they aim to achieve. And further defined it as a game in which you would not need to add or remove significant sections or mechanics for them to achieve their goals more satisfactorily. We're fun people, really, I swear. We found that using this, we could only come up with a handful of games that we wouldn't change significantly, as even our absolute favorites had mechanics that we don't that we didn't like, sections that we didn't enjoy, or most commonly were 10 to 15% too long. Our short list came down to 4: Hypnospace Outlaw, The Beginner's Guide, What Remains of Edith Finch, and Disco Elysium. What games for you would be those that are perfect at what they aim to achieve? Is there a better version of perfect that they that would create a better thinking exercise? And what would fit that? And hypothetically, if the absolute most perfect game actually could be created and was released, appealing to everyone with absolutely no negative drawbacks, how would that affect the creative world? When the benchmark for perfect has been set, what happens next?
Yeah, so we're going to use this as kind of a jumping off point to talk about perfect games as like an idea.
Yeah.
You know, we can talk about, you know, the actual question as well.
Mm-hmm.
Here, but part of what I was thinking with this was the idea of the thing that drove me to this like topic was the idea that for me, if perfect is defined by you cannot take or add anything to it without fucking with it,
mm-hmm.
and ruining it.
I don't know whose idea that originally was, but that is the thing that is said about Tetris, right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
I was going to say like that is a, that applies itself to a very small subset of games,
mm-hmm.
you know? So perfect is not, this is going to sound weird, but in a way like perfect is kind of not a, qualitative expression.
It's definitely, you know, it's not operative, right?
Yeah. It doesn't necessarily mean really good,
mm-hmm.
you know, cause it's perfect. It like, to me, it belies a certain cleanliness to something. Again, you know, earlier I was talking about, Will's review of the new Final Fantasy game,
mm-hmm.
where like, it's like, I really love this. It has so much bloat and mess.
Yeah.
You know, that's a deeply imperfect game. He still loves it,
mm-hmm.
but there's just, it has this maximalist throw everything in approach.
Yeah.
To me, that is contrary to perfection.
Yeah.
That means, you know, it cannot be perfect. It can still be very good.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect doesn't necessarily mean the best in this scenario, but it can't be perfect.
Yeah. And perfect also stands athwart the notion of messy, as well. And messiness is not necessarily, you know, an anti-virtue, right? Like messing.
It can be, but it's not always.
Right.
Yeah, for sure. Like it's how it's done,
mm-hmm.
you know? So like, I think for perfection, there has to be a level of cleanliness. And I'm somebody who likes cleanliness, appreciates that as well as I appreciate messiness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like both.
Yeah.
There are things I think of as very clean that I think approach perfect.
Yeah.
Like Tetris is obviously an example of that. You can't add anything or subtract anything from it. It wouldn't work. It's a simple carb in some ways. But it's perfect. I think the other thing that I think of that kind of approaches this, weirdly enough, is Into the Breach.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think very many other games do.
Right.
You know, it's hard for me to think of other examples, but I would not add or subtract anything from Into the Breach.
Right.
To change it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, part of me, I have a weird feeling that a little bit that if the insects, when they first drop, if they're in a position where you cannot prevent building damage
mm-hmm.
through all of your moves, that feels a little bit like a flaw to me.
Yeah.
But I actually am not certain that's the case.
Yeah.
In the game, like that could be a user error thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's the closest thing I can come up with. Like needs to, would be different.
Yeah.
Could be added to this or taken away and make it better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. There's a certain that definition of perfection almost kind of implies like a hermetically sealed, you know, kind of a kind of aspect to it. And just it's too easy to find something that, you know, that subverts it, right? Or not subverts it, like, you know, says something about the categorization. It's just like anything I could think of that might fit into that swings back around, and I can think of like the one flaw that would stop it from, you know, from qualifying, right?
Yeah, it's pretty easy, you know. So to come up with a disqualifier, so this ends up being very rare. Like, if I look at the list of games that Andrew came up with, mm-hmm. which are four games I like to love.
Yes,
right. Like Hypnospace Outlaw, Beginner's Guide, and Disco Elysium are some of my favorites.
Mm-hmm.
Love those games. Or Remains of Edith Finch, I think, is really good.
Yes.
I love those games. I can't call them perfect.
Nope.
You know, I don't think that they are quite perfect,
mm-hmm.
as they are. There are things that I would change about them.
Yeah.
And even if they were perfect and they came out, if they did release like this mathematically perfect thing, under the definition, the way I think about it, they did with Tetris, and there are still other games.
Yeah.
And that's because perfection is not a benchmark of like obviating other things.
Yeah.
You know, it is necessarily limited,
mm-hmm.
and there are things you cannot get without imperfection,
mm-hmm.
right? So, like, I think about the stuff whenever like a Starfield comes out or a Baldur's Gate 3 comes out, and people talk about glitches.
Yeah,
glitch discourse. When you're having a game that big, part of the cost of admission of doing that kind of thing is imperfections.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get to not have that.
No.
You know, I think that, you know, Fallout New Vegas is like twice as good as what remains as Edith Finch,
mm-hmm.
or remains of Edith Finch, but it's far from perfect.
Right.
Has a lot of problems.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like better
there,
even though it's further from perfect.
There are bummer quests in Fallout New Vegas, right? Like the star, sarsaparilla cap bullshit, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, they're under, the Legion faction, mm-hmm. is underdeveloped.
Yeah.
In that game, mm-hmm. You know, there are problems with it, but I still think it's better.
Yeah.
Even if it's further away from perfect,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah. And this also, I think, you know, the idea of perfect, like how do you separate this from, you know, what it tries to do, like the idea of calling something perfect gets to like a little bit of the hypothetical there. That they ended the question with, you know, like, okay, so what happens to creative work once it's out there? Well, there's an assumption that perfect is perfect to everybody, right?
Yeah, that's a thing too.
And, you know, any creative work is going to be, you know, an exchange, right? there are two participants in it, especially with games, right?
Yes.
You know, so that is a complicating factor. I think all of it gets around to is perfection actually a thing that is worth pursuing, or is it something that is accidentally stumbled upon? Right.
I think it's the second. I think it's a thing that is stumbled upon in certain kinds of exceedingly clean bits of art.
Yes.
You can stumble upon a kind of perfection.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really possible to overcorrect the other way and reject cleanliness.
Yeah.
Entirely. Like something can be really good for what it is and you know, for what it's trying to do. And there is sometimes folk just like want a maximalism.
Yeah.
To things and just don't want that,
mm-hmm.
you know. I think it can also be kind of a faulty thing.
Yeah,
I think that it's easiest and best to reject the idea of perfection as a, you know, a qualitative statement, and you get around that.
Yeah,
you know. So I can call something like Rocket League perfect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I think Rocket League. You know, I haven't played it in forever. There's probably been changes and stuff. I don't know if there's actually a meta. When I played it, I was like, this is really good.
Mm-hmm.
The quality on display is great. This is a simple idea, but a really, really good one.
Mm-hmm.
This feels really good. I can see all of the depth here.
Yes.
You know, I never want to play it again. You know, it's not because it's too clean. I just don't give a shit,
mm-hmm.
About hitting soccer balls with cars.
Yeah.
You know,
I get it. Yeah.
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 I need to update my references. I've been talking about that as an example of something really good that I don't like for like 2013 since we did Comrade.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If I think about like what I value more than perfection in a game, it like everything always comes back to integration, right? Are the elements that are present in this all pulling in not necessarily the same direction, but in complementary directions, you know? And that's how you end up with something, you know, that I admire and think is at least worth throwing into a discussion and like this, which is like Pathologic, right?
Yeah.
You know, that, you know, feels like it needs to be in a pantheon, but more so because every element is, you know, playing off of each other. There's very little that actually feels like super extraneous about that because it's all to a purpose, right?
Yeah. Like kind of focus.
Yeah.
Is a thing. And that's what, you know, bring it back. And if, you know, not to, you know, keep using the example of the new Final Fantasy, but like any big open world maximalist game.
Yeah.
One of the things is when you try to be perfect to all people, as opposed to the audience, you also incur a debt of messes.
Yes.
Of from having things at cross purposes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like turning everything into a disparate minigame is going to hit for some people.
Mm-hmm.
Like some people are going to really like all those minigames, but somebody's going to dislike some of them.
Yeah.
You know, just about everyone's going to dislike some of them and wish that the game didn't have it.
Yeah.
You know, as a thing, like you, scope is like the enemy of perfection.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways, the scope. And again, like what you're saying, disparity of focus and direction.
Yeah.
You know, I also think a lot about perfection as a thing that you can achieve if you ignore certain things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't necessarily think this is a perfect, I wouldn't put this in Tetris, but when I think about perfect for my taste.
Yeah.
Monster Train is really close.
Yes.
I love that game. I've climbed the Covenants. I can play it anytime and enjoy it. I've gone really deep in it. I've never read a word and cared about what it said in that.
Oh
that
no.
That wasn't a stat.
I would go even further and say, like, can it be perfect if the aesthetics are completely irrelevant?
Yeah.
Like, and you know, actually kind of detrimental.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, is the narrative, you know, there's one of the things that really got to me about Game of the Year discourse with Tears of the Kingdom,
yes,
right? Where everyone was talking about how fun it was to build machines, but every single thing talking about it never, like, I defy anyone if I put a gun to their head to tell me what the story of that game is.
It's so funny because the two, like, big Game of the Year contenders, or at least, you know, two of the ones that were on most people's lips, Tears of the Kingdom and Alan Wake 2, had the exact inverse problem.
Opposite problem. Yeah. Yeah, same thing with Alan Wake 2, where you run into people saying like, oh, this is the best thing ever.
Uh-huh.
This is asking questions that I want art to ask. And I'm like, yeah, how is it to play? And then, you know, I'd rather not answer that. Like, I plead the fifth. You know, like, I...
Have you considered that the written world can change the written word can change the world, and the written world can change the word?
the oodala. You know, I have. Have you considered that in order to play this, you have to flashlight juggle thousands of tedious enemies in order to get to those part to get to the dance number you're so fond of?
Uh-huh.
You know, like it's a thing where I don't think you can approach that kind of perfection while having something you just ignore.
Yes.
Like, you have to pretend something isn't there for something to be perfect.
And again, we're saying this in terms of Alan Wake 2. The original example here was Monster Train, right?
Yeah.
Like, this also applies to games that we absolutely love. So.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm beating up on Alan Wake 2, but at the same time, like, Monster Train, any of the lore and stuff, like, it doesn't, you know, and that's where you run into one of the things that I never buy when somebody will, as a defense of something, where they'll be like, oh, you can ignore it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, I can, you know, but I'm still, it's on the plate. Mm-hmm. It's there. The game is asking me to pay attention to it at some point. And on some level, I am thinking about when I play a game, even when it's not for the show, I am kind of evaluating it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking about how good it is. So I'm going to look at stuff like that, even if I can ignore it.
Yeah.
And you know, it'd be weird for me not to notice that the pros in Monster Train is no good.
Yeah.
You know, or, yeah. You know, charitably, like, uninspired.
Yes.
Like,
Yeah. And you know, even if you are not a critic, quote unquote, whatever the fuck we are, everything that you play, you know, or consume exists in relation to everything else that you're consumed. You kind of, you cannot, you know, pretend that you just fell out of a coconut tree, right?
Yeah. There's also the element of this where perfection doesn't transfer across things, and the way I'll explain that
gets back to fungibility.
Fungibility, but also like something like let's say you make a perfect cheeseburger.
Yes.
And I really like cheeseburgers. Mm-hmm. I like lots of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, so even if there is a perfect deck builder, that's a thing. Yes, I can play that deck builder, but at some point I've had that deck builder enough.
Yeah.
And I'm in the mood for like throw a pineapple on there. Fuck it.
No.
You know, give me a burger with an egg on it. I'll try that. You know, even if that's not my favorite.
Yeah.
Things like that. Like people enjoy a wide variety of things. So there's no way to, you know, perfection does not equate to a complete diet or fulfilling all of your needs.
No.
You know, for most people, I think some mm-hmm. people do feel that a little bit when they play a game and it's their forever game.
Yeah.
Like I bet you there are people who do think that Final Fantasy 14 is perfect
mm-hmm.
and it's the only thing they can really consider themselves playing.
Yep.
For the foreseeable.
Yes.
You know, there's nothing else they need. And you know, go with God. That's mm-hmm. cool. You know, I don't have that as a thing. Even if I did fall into one of those holes from earlier in the episode and just like play the Spiderweb software games, at some point I would still fire up Monster Train.
Mm-hmm.
I would still play, you know, new deck builders and shit. I still would want to care, like try out Baltaro, stuff like that.
Yeah. What's very funny is the fact that it got a very good remake precludes Resident Evil 4 from being a part of this discussion. if we had this conversation 2 years ago, that would absolutely be brought up, right?
So it's a really interesting idea, but I think it really plays into misusing the vocabulary for perfection
mm-hmm.
as a thing.
It's
a long-winded way of falling back into subjectivity soup.
A little bit, but I mean, we've thrown up enough valid alternate interpretations of what is worth pursuing. I think that it doesn't just come down to like, whatever gets you off, right?
No, of course. I guess what I mean to when I say subjectivity is like the idea of how hard those little bits, those imperfections
mm-hmm.
are going to be in your shoe.
Yeah.
You know, to make them feel like they are not elidable and thus tempt you into using the P word.
Yes.
Pussy. perfect. You know. You know, I think about how often I'm told that you, like, by Yakuza fans, that at a certain point in the game it unlocks and you don't have to pay attention to the combat.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm not capable of ignoring random encounters.
Mm-hmm.
They feel annoying to me. I feel the time.
Yeah.
As it comes up, it like gets on my shoulder. It makes my shoulders tense.
Yeah.
And stopped when I'm playing a video game.
And just at a certain point, like you, why are you continuing to apologize for this thing by pretending it doesn't exist? Just say, I like this and you don't. And maybe this recommendation isn't really going to fly for you.
This thing doesn't bother me.
Yeah.
You know, that thing that would bother you a lot doesn't bother me. And I think that's a thing that when people talk about this, like we're talking about language, we're talking about taking a personal experience and like trying to describe it usually, right? Like when you're doing that, it is a thing. It's like describing a flavor to somebody.
Yeah.
You know, that you can't really do it.
Yeah.
You know, you can tell me that this has this stops and does cozy core play dates
mm-hmm.
every 10 minutes, but you really don't notice them because this is super good.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'd notice them.
Yeah.
I might notice them. I feel mm-hmm. like I notice them.
Yeah.
You know, and it's cool that you don't, but it's not a thing that's transferable.
It gets back to, it smells in there. It smells funny in there. No, it doesn't.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The encounter rate in Yakuza's is atrocious and it ruins the game. No, it doesn't. Well, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't like doing that many fights that feel like that.
Yeah. You know, and I do. I like those games. I'm playing Yakuza Zero right now. So
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, it's not a thing. It's not transferable.
Yeah.
You know, as a thing. Like, and it's a thing that it kind of plays into like recommendations or poison. It kind of plays into, you know, a lot of different stuff that we talk around on here.
Talk around, focus on way too much.
Yes. You boop around the house with nonstop.
Hey, Gary, remember when we said, oh, this topic, we can hit this and be done with it real quick?
We did. I don't know what time it is, though, so it's fine. We'll scoot through the rest of the stuff.
Okay.
Thanks, everybody, for your questions. Keep an eye out for that dispatch.
Mm-hmm.
Prompt for next month.
Please do. And we don't say where those should go. That is a Patreon reward. It is a prompt that goes up as a post on Patreon, and we pull these from the comments on that. Yeah.
Yes. Let's get started reading some listener responses.
Let's do. Gonna get started here with Ben, who says, Crazy Taxi is very much a nostalgia game for me. I played it constantly in a local pizza place while living on a U.S. Air Force base in Germany. After moving back to the States, I went about a decade without even thinking of it. One night, my wife mentioned that she wanted a game where she could just drive around like a maniac, and I knew just the game. Over 4 years later, we still play it pretty regularly. We've even shared it with my father-in-law, who had a blast with it as well. So to answer your question, yes, this game has a magnetism and charm that can still be appreciated even by people who never touched it in its prime. Thanks for covering such a great game. Don't feel bad about a short episode. I'm glad to hear my favorite podcasters cover one of my all-time favorite games. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Good. Thank you. Yeah, me too. We'll see if people feel the same way about Pony Island. Naveen says, love the Watch Out for Fireballs on Crazy Taxi. Mark me as a fan of stretching the format. Thank you. The game is also near and dear to my heart, even though I'm terrible at it. The art style is aged like fine wine. The driving model and smooth 60 FPS convey both the precision and an exhilarating sense of speed. And to many, it was our first introduction to how analog triggers would be a boon to driving games going forward. However, one part of the game's legacy often goes unremarked, and that is the fact that it's an open-world driving game. While certainly not the first game to do that, it truly blew my mind to be able to freely drive across the entire city in full 3D nearly 2 years before GTA 3 was released. I think we can trace a direct lineage from Crazy Taxi to the likes of Burnout Paradise and Forza Horizon, and it's odd to not see that comparison being made much these days. In any case, the episode got me downloading the Xbox 360 port to see if I can achieve anything better than a B. Maybe this time I can make some crazy money.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Don't diss my homies.
Please don't. Lincoln. Please don't.
Good luck.
Mm-hmm.
The B is like a ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
So it is hard to get past the B.
I still have plenty of fun getting Bs. It's fine.
Yeah. Bs get degrees.
Yeah. Dylan writes, I don't think my relationship with Crazy Taxi is nostalgic as much as it is formative. This is one of those games that came out at the perfect time for me. I distinctly remember playing this with friends at church lock-ins and Boy Scout troop events in a pass the controller type of way. Even though the map is kind of small, it perfectly nails the one more turn gameplay completely differently than something like Civilization. Oops, it's 3 a.m. In the episode, Gary said he wasn't really fond of the music in 2024, and I can't say that I am either, but at the time, this was the most memorable thing in the world. I was born in 1992, so when this came out, my music knowledge was just Backstreet Boys, my friend's Linkin Park CD, and the smooth jazz radio my mom played when driving. The Offspring was completely unlike anything that I'd known before, and that yeah, broke my goddamn brain. I didn't get really into punk until several years later in high school, but The Offspring led me down the way to bands like Minor Threat, Bad Brains, Black Flag, Husker Du, and Agent Orange. I didn't start listening to punk solely because of Crazy Taxi, but I liked the timeline that I'm in today, where Five Yas helped me get there. It's the attempted vehicle manslaughter version of Rock Band getting people into The Clash. Also, I haven't played the game in probably 15 years, but shit, man, I can perfectly hear the attract mode in my head.
Yeah, I will never begrudge anything that gets people into Husker Du.
Yeah.
You know, as a thing. Mm-hmm. So I'm not a, you know, super hardcore punk fan other than Husker Du.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I out of those bands, that's my favorite by a lot.
Yeah.
I had the benefit of being a little bit familiar before Crazy Taxi.
Yeah.
Through being a million years old.
Mm-hmm.
So would never begrudge.
No. Whatever path gets you to this, you know, to liking cool stuff that you enjoy.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Moving on to Unavowed responses. Andrew says, I liked Unavowed overall. It felt like a fun, nostalgic throwback, and the writing and characters, with the exception of the annoying cop stereotype, were of fun B-movie quality, which puts it in the top 10% of games writing. As a resident of the only city in the world, I enjoyed seeing recreations of the places I regularly go. That being said, when it comes to difficulty, it's like Freddy Fish in the case of the skin-flaying demons. I don't want to be stuck behind hours of moon logic, but I also rolled my eyes when the Bronx ghost said he hid something behind his heart rate and then mentioned, you know, the license plate in the garage, the openers in the mailbox. You already gave me the option to ask my companions what to do. Maybe give me a little bit of credit. Finally, I like the morality questions. They all made me genuinely think. What I liked less was that all the correct answers were let the magical creature live, even if it was just threatening to kill a random baby. To paraphrase Gary, sometimes a fairy has got to go.
Yeah.
And I mean that in the way of the fae.
Yes. Yeah. You know, making their bad deals and tricksters stuff. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. It is a game with no rigor to it at all.
Yeah.
And I would agree with that criticism.
Yes.
As a thing. It did feel a lot like playing a movie or watching a movie when I was playing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I like Freddy Fish in the case of the skin flaying demons.
Yeah. I would play that.
Yeah.
I would really like it if, on Blue Sky, I was talking about, somebody was talking about the return of FMV games.
Yes.
And like how we're kind of there, and I want those, but I want them to have puzzles.
Yeah.
I don't want that back with the like no mechanics, please.
Yeah, Gabriel Knight 2 or above, please. Yeah.
Yes, you know, and not all those puzzles are winners.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it has an awful maze at the end, but like, I don't know. I think a little bit of puzzle and rigor makes an adventure game really sing. It can't just be Norco.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Agreed.
For me.
Yeah. Yeah. Andrew writes, hi there. I sponsored.
Different
two Andrews. Wow. Hi there. I sponsored the Unavowed episode, or rather my husband Ed did, as a Christmas present to me. Thanks, Ed. We play several point and click adventure games a year, pretty much the bulk of the narrative media we consume together. And for whatever reason, this one stuck with us. It's nothing groundbreaking, admittedly, but it's a nice demonstration of some extremely solid craftsmanship, playing around with the limits of the Adventure Game Studio platform through little tweaks and innovations and a lot of hard work. The multiple character origins and even the choice between a male and female player character might seem like huge deals, for example, but are extremely rare in the context of this genre. Like huge deals. This is fortunately combined with some great art, a solid story, lots of pixelated rain, and acting that ranges from genuinely good to Evening at the Community Theater. Non-derogatory somehow. I like how that little verbal tick of yours doing like an Elcor like declaration of derogatory or non-derogatory has infected.
I don't know if I can totally take credit for that. I think that might be something I picked up from Weep in the Slack.
Gotcha. Okay.
But I really like it.
It's useful. It really is.
Yeah, it's super useful. You know?
Yeah. They continue talking about the acting. Emily St. James, formerly Vanderwerf, said that it had the best plot twist of 2018 in any medium. I'm not sure I'd go that far, but I think there's room for games like this. Ones that feel like a surprisingly good 90s comic book issue, a canceled too soon TV show season, or an unexpectedly nice diner meal. Thanks so much. Thanks to you and to Ed for having us play it. Yeah.
Yeah. And that really well put.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is a really even-handed kind of perfect examination of this.
Yes.
You know, very, very pretty, good, you know, solid story. Like,
mm-hmm.
you know, that is kind of how I felt about the game.
Yes.
Like went down real smooth,
mm-hmm.
you know, as a thing. I would encourage people, you know, in terms of, this is rare in terms of pure straight up point and click adventure games.
Mm-hmm.
But if you haven't, Andrew, try the Quest for Glory games.
Oh yeah.
As you know, they allow you to pick your character and have stats and stuff as hybrid adventure games. I think those do a lot of cool stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a subgenre of adventure game I'd love to have come back.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, thank you again. Mm-hmm. Moving on to response about Pony Island. Dylan says, you guys brought up two fantastic points early in your coverage of Pony Island, that this trick really only works once, and that meta-ness in games has become a genre tool like skill trees rather than a subversive tool. Pony Island was my first Daniel Mullins game and also one of the first meta games I played. It genuinely took me by complete surprise when I had to fix the code to even start the game. I later played The Hex, which looks at the same game-making process, though is even less fun of an outright game. By the time I went into Inscription, I knew there was going to be a trick. It wasn't subversive anymore. I might not have known exactly what the trick was, but I knew it was going to be there nonetheless. It actually would have been more surprising of Daniel Mullins if he didn't make Inscription meta in any way. I feel like games such as Pony Island need to be played early in someone's gaming to be impactful. As soon as you start noticing the game makes me think about being a game, as a media trope, the trick dies. And all you have is something that's not really actually fun to play because the trick came first and the game came second. Thankfully, Inscription is still fun even without the meta-ness.
Yeah. Just with time to think about it and, you know, just, you know, post-gaming on the conversation there. Pony Island is, is interesting in the context of like one person's career. I think,
yes.
You know, more so than anything else for me.
That's a really good way to put it.
Yeah.
You know, well said. It is also a thing that I think that, like, you know, we talked about this at the episode. Everyone gets their first exposure to something, you know, and like, I would never take that specialness away.
Right.
But you have to, you know, similar to that perfection question in some ways, you have to allow for other people to have already have those antibodies.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, and that gets to it, you know, again, an example I hit on, you know, quite a bit, but Alan Wake 2, right?
Yes. Just like,
you know, it's tough.
Yeah. I respect that this is impressive for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the idea that it's one of the things why, one of the big reasons why I'll reject the, oh, you can just ignore the play argument is a thing, because that's the kind of thing that might keep you move you forward, even if the trick no longer works.
Right.
Right. Like if Alan Wake was a blast to play, like,
it was
Evil Within 2, you know, in terms of a game, even if those meta tricks are not impressive to me, like the fact that it's metatextual and stuff, and that, you know, they get the actors and the voice actors to play the characters, and there's live action FMV stuff that comes in, even if that stuff to me is a little bit tedious right now, if it was a blast to play, I might go through it and find stuff to like.
Yeah,
but there's no new trick here, and it is tedious is a really hard sell.
Play can set a higher floor than concept is the elemental thing we're getting at there.
At the end of the day, you are playing a video game.
Yeah.
You know, and play is the verb you do, you know, so it, and it's like, you know, I really like it when games keep that in mind.
Yes.
That's a thing.
Yeah. Speaking of play, let's move on to Age of Empires 2 responses.
Yeah.
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 This is going to be me. Gabriel writes, Age of Empires 2's soundtrack is too good. Sometimes I like to put it on when I am doing homework or chores. Plus, some of those song titles are ridiculous. Titles like I Will Beat on Your Behind, Pork Parts, Smells Like Crickets, Tastes Like Chicken, and Shamburger. What the fuck is a Shamburger? Hey, what's going on with those album titles, Gary?
Those track titles?
Yeah, those track titles. What's going on?
I don't know. Since we don't edit anymore, I don't have to look at the soundtrack. I listen, you know, to the soundtrack, but it's just on a big YouTube
playlist
that just says Age of Empires 2 soundtrack
full,
and I don't have the song titles.
Uh-huh.
Not a playlist, like a big, you know, file. So that's incredible.
Huh.
I had no idea.
Yeah. No, there it is. Shamburger, Drizzle, Tea Station, Bass Bag,
Bass Bag.
Yeah. Bass Bag, maybe.
Maybe Bass Bag.
Yeah.
The idea of doing chores to that soundtrack is really appealing to me.
Uh-huh.
Like being a little worker and just, you know, I don't know, chopper. And then just like doing the dishes like to that, you know, music sounds really good.
The expanded one, Neep Ninny Bod Basura. Basura.
Oh, well, I know what Neep Ninny Bod is.
What's that? What?
That's part of the thing that the Transformers say.
Oh,
As the universal greeting when they extrude energy out of their chest and feed it to other people.
We've got voodoo doo doo, tied me over warm em ups, Yeah.
Like a delicious cereal.
Yeah.
I would like a Tide Me Over, Warm Them Up.
Quest for...
That's like a Uncrustable.
Quest for eggs. Quest for bacon. Diamond dragon. Carne helado.
Huh. I like the idea of somebody just like, this game doesn't have a narrative. I can name these whatever the fuck
whatever.
I want.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of fun. Robert says, this game became the multiplayer game of choice my sophomore year of college. I chose to play with friends rather than do my last night of reviewing for my Organic Chemistry 2 final, which earned me a B rather than an A. Now that I'm older and wiser and have a PhD in biology, I can look back and say it was totally worth it. 5 stars, no notes.
Yeah, great no. Game. The difference between a B and an A is not actually enough to, you know, not have an experience like that.
As soon as you leave school, that
doesn't
fucking matter.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, like every one of those things. Like, do you want extra credit?
Uh-huh.
You can do this little task. God, I would should have done anything else.
Yeah.
Like getting, like when you were in school and you would get like 110% on a test,
mm-hmm.
you know, as a thing. And it was like, ooh, I get a little sticker. And I was just like, I wish I understood how little that would have mattered.
Mm-hmm.
God, I wish I understood that.
Yeah. Ridiculous. Ridiculous what we just force kids through. Come on.
School.
School. I was good at it, too. I hate that I was good at it, but I was good at it.
Yeah. It's a,
Yeah.
Wish I knew.
Naveen writes, really looking forward to the WoF on AoE 2, a game that is probably in my top 10 in terms of sheer time played. Shout out to the MSN Gaming Zone. I was a GameSpy kid myself.
Yeah. We don't do enough shout outs to the MSN Gaming Zone on this podcast.
People are slipping. People have forgotten where they're come from.
We're going to start doing it like a land acknowledgement. At the beginning of every episode.
We acknowledge this. We came before. I came back to the game when the Definitive Edition dropped, and it has more than held up. While it certainly wasn't as flashy as its RTS contemporaries with asymmetrical factions, Age of Empires' subtle faction distinctions has given the game a depth that I've grown to appreciate over time. The fact that it's being supported with new expansions to this day, as well as a modern console port that works better than you'd think, only speaks to the strong foundation that was laid in 1999.
Yeah. Nice.
Well put.
It does. One of the YouTubers I subscribe to, like, this is one of those games where, like I said, I, you know, immersed myself in it for the period before we did it. So I subscribed to a bunch of YouTubers, and one of them uploaded a thing like today or yesterday that's like, what Age of Empires 2 news can we expect Friday? I was like, shit, man. Like, yeah, this is an ongoing concern.
Yeah.
You know, most of my YouTube are like 3-hour trailer reactions to Elden Ring.
No.
And this one person's like, what Age of Empires 2 news are we going to get?
Just in anticipation of it, not here's what happened. It's what do we think is going to
be. I love it. Yeah. I'm so excited. I love it so much.
Oh.
Robinson says, I played the trial version of Age of Empires Rise of Rome on the family's new computer, then got the gold edition to fall in love with. It wasn't that long before Age of Empires 2, The Age of Kings, was the new hotness, and so my parents got me that game as well. Although I like the first one a little bit more, I put thousands of hours into both and have played them regularly over the last 25 years, and I am weak at this game. You'd think that having thousands of hours in a game would mean I would play on any difficulty harder than the easiest mode. But I defy society. Cloud. Normally, I like being good at a game, mastering it and knowing it on a deep level. But with Age of Empires, I just don't care. I've never played multiplayer. I'm here to play little historical military adventures where I gather resources, conquer countrysides, or perform subtler tasks as some scenarios demand. I've gotten only good enough that I could finish all the expansions of Age of Empires 2's HD version without too much save abusing. And if that's where my skill level peaks, then I won't lose sleep at night.
That is a very well-defined and healthy relationship with the game, I think.
I think so, too. That's powerful.
Yeah.
You know, and don't you know, be too hard on yourself. Like, beating the scenarios is tough.
Yeah, yeah.
I found that, like, I got better at skirmishes and could play them in higher difficulties in the easiest mode, but I could not, like, you know, the actual campaigns are hard.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, being that good is plenty good.
Yeah, they expect a lot of you, yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, this is, and I had that feeling of thinking like, oh, this could be my forever game as well. Mm-hmm. This idea, you know, it's like, oh shit, I'm just going to keep doing these.
Yeah.
So yeah, very cool.
Abe, who sponsored that episode, says, thanks for tolerating another real-time strategy after I made you play Dark Omen. I'm realizing the gaming I did as a kid was apparently much more genre-limited than I thought. Age of Empires 2 has the distinguished honor of being the only game that has ever gotten me in better shape. During the first half of my ninth grade school year, we were getting house renovations done. And in the meantime, we lived at my grandma's house. So we left our PC at home, and the only game on my grandma's computer was Space Cadet Pinball. So I was severely game deprived. On weekends, my chunky self would bike the 5 miles to our house, where I would spend the day conducting siege warfare and recovering from said bike ride. This continued until I got an N64 for my birthday, after which all of my gaming stayed at grandma's house because she wanted to watch, quote, that game where the little guy runs around. Ocarina of Time. That describes so many games. The game where the guy goes around. He's got a guy going that's around. Great.
That's very good. Yeah. A grandma pilled sentence.
Yeah.
That's great. And never apologize.
No.
For sending us weird old PC shit. Mm-hmm. You're my favorite, Abe. I love an excuse. I didn't like Dark Omen all that much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was okay. But I love an excuse to go to these weird places that we don't usually go.
Yep.
Makes me very happy.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Very cool. And a very, very charming story.
Yes.
Tom says, as a child, I played the shit out of Age of Empires 2, The Conquerors, but could never manage the more intense scenarios. I recently reinstalled it, and after a nostalgia trip through the classics, El Cid, Saladin, Montezuma, I was amazed to see how many extra campaigns have been added since, but also how incredible some of them are, easily surpassing even the best of the original campaigns in quality. Many of the scenarios pushing the boundaries of what is possible within the game engine, significantly changing the way you play and think about the game. Of particular note were the Vlad Dracula scenario that plays like Risk, blocking you from building military buildings and forcing you to capture small towns to produce different units, finally making area control more meaningful than just building walls around your one town. The Liloy mission, which sees you trying to simultaneously manage three different forces, playing different roles in different corners of the map. This sounds stressful, but is actually balanced well once you get the rhythm of it. The Gaja Mada level, where new vassals keep spawning and colonizing small islands, and you have to protect them while also defeating your bigger rivals. And my favorite level of all, the Vlad Dracula scenario, where you have to defend a small town on the Danube while under assault from a large city and all its satellite towns. An incredibly tense and knife's edge early game slowly turns into a victory snowball as you launch what forces you can spare at each satellite town and take out critical infrastructure, weakening the coalition against you before finally besieging the main city as an unstoppable force.
Mm.
I'm just overwhelmed by how much love, care, and ongoing support this gaming classic has received, and how the newer campaigns have breathed so much life and variety into what was once quite a repetitive framework.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well said.
Well said. And I like that breakdown of the different, you know, campaigns, like the, you know, those highlight kind of things, because if I'm being honest, never going to play them, but it's really cool to just hear what the gimmick is of them. Right.
It's also a thing too, where it's interesting to hear, because I had read online that the Dracula one was not super good, you know, and it's interesting to hear counterpoints about that.
Yes.
Too, you know, because if there is a chance I will go back and play these at some point, it's good to know that my boy Dracula doesn't have, you know, a jobber campaign.
Yeah
it's your boy Dracula. Thanks everybody for writing in.
Yes,
we appreciate you.
If you have thoughts about next month's games, which are Teardown Part 2, The Room mm-hmm. Escape iOS games that are on Steam, believe they're on, yeah, that won't be on sale by the time you're hearing this. They're cheap anyway.
They're not very expensive. I actually switched from iOS to doing the Steam version of The Room because I like the control factor
right
a little bit more. Mm-hmm. It's also, again, since a couple of people have asked, I'm probably gonna play the second one as well.
Mm-hmm.
And we're gonna talk about it a little bit. I like those games.
Mm-hmm.
We're not gonna do a whole series dive, but it won't, you know, be a whole episode on a 45 minute long game.
Right.
And it's not quite that short anyway.
Yeah.
But
Our premium episode for next month, which is Spider-Man Miles Morales, go to duckfeed.tv/contact and write in about those. If you have if you have thoughts about multiple games, please separate them into multiple responses. And usual guidelines, keep them brief and keep them specific is all preferable.
Yeah, we would appreciate that. Time to announce April's games.
Yes. Now.
First game of the month. And write in if you have thoughts about these as well by April 15th.
Mm-hmm.
First one is a game called Dandara. This is a Patreon request from Micah. I was not familiar with this. This is apparently like a all dimension, like Metroidvania kind of movement Metroidvania.
Yeah.
Looks really interesting.
Yeah.
Dandara. After that, we're doing Lunacid. This is the indie Kingsfield-like.
Yes.
That has come out that has been on our radar for a while and looks awesome.
Yeah.
Just, so Bonfireside Chat fans.
Rejoice.
Yeah.
And just recently came out of early access. It hit its 1.0 like a couple months ago or something. Yeah.
Yeah. And then this is a Gary month pick. And we're finally doing something we threatened to do a lot, which is redo an episode.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. It's Bloodlines again. No, it's not. lying there. We're doing a proper episode on Super Mario World.
Yes. The Super Mario World episode that exists in our archive. It's a live episode-ish, but it is mostly like...
it's all, entirely.
Yeah.
We didn't actually do a panel. It's just listener responses.
Yeah, it's just people talking about their memories of Super Mario World. And that's a shame, because Super Mario World is a fantastic game, A, B, very interesting to talk about what it's, you know, what it is. And boy, am I just always in the mood to play it. So
it is my favorite Mario game.
Mm-hmm.
2D classification. Like, I love Bowser's Fury a lot.
Yeah.
I love Mario World. I just beat Mario Wonder, and I still like Mario World better. I think Mario World is the best Mario game.
Yes.
And I'm really excited to talk about it. Came with my Super Nintendo, played it so many fucking times.
Yes.
And it is just, it's a joy. It's so weird. You fight a lot of football like monsters and stuff, like the sports boys.
I love the sports boys.
Like, why are the sports boys there? It's so weird. Like, it's Dinosaur Island, but some of them play all the sports at once.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Everybody brought their own equipment, and they couldn't agree on which game to play.
Yeah, they just decided to mash them all into one game. It's really great. I'm really excited to have an opportunity to go through that. The first Cape level is maybe my favorite single video game level.
Oh, it's a revelation. Yeah.
Yeah. Is one of my all time favorite things. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be our premium for that one. If you want to hear those premium episodes, which are going to be Spider-Man, Miles Morales, Super Mario World, as well as all of our premium episodes. So Age of Empires 2, Darkest Dungeon 2, and going back, you do so by becoming a patron.
Yes.
$5 a month at patreon.com gets it for you.
Yes. And a bunch of other stuff too. Real Lich Hours talked about that a lot in the question and answer. Our Baldur's Gate 3 podcast, Unfilmable, also talked about that. Talking about horror games. We pack that with all kinds of good stuff, we think. So
yeah, we do our best too. Yeah. We want everyone to feel good about patronizing us. Hopefully you do.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you are not demographically identical to us and you have a project you'd like us to shout out, please send me an email at gary@duckfeed.tv with your name, pronouns, and a description. We'd be happy to do so. This month, I want to draw everyone's attention. Jaden Dale, who does the art for Realish Hours, our Baldur's Gate podcast, and a friend just recently did a tabletop module for a game called Troika. Troika is a fantasy tabletop game that I'm not super familiar with.
Okay.
But they have a thing called the Grand Troika Spherical Fair and Exposition, where people can pitch content for it. It's a science fiction role-playing game. I'm not very familiar with it. However, they put out a thing called Brutal Magic Battle World Preface there on their itch.io.
Okay.
Page. It is kind of the opening kind of source book bit to this thing they're going to do for that podcast system. It has, you know, Jaden Dale art in it, which is good. You'll be like Jaden Dale's art. The cover looks sick.
Yeah.
It looks like an alternate universe Castlevania kind of thing, but with like the
rules.
Dracula has like blood humans, like blood golem beard of bees almost. Like, it's hard to describe.
Yeah.
It looks super cool. It's on itch.io. It's pay what you want. It has a long link that it would be annoying to read out loud. So we're going to put it in the episode description.
Yes.
And that is where you can find it.
Yes. It's under, it'll be at, autoguy.itch.io.
Yes.
And a more specific link will be in the description.
Yes. So I recommend taking a look at that.
Mm-hmm.
What else can they do?
Leave a rating or review if you'd like to, tell friends, join us in thanking our producer, Gwen, and most of all, stop chasing perfection.